Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings, and by faith Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. By faith Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children, because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned," Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so in a manner of speaking, he did not receive Isaac back from death. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. By faith, Moses' parents laid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God rather than enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the application of blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched round them for 7 days. By faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign enemies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released, so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment, They were put to death by stoning. They were sawn in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and ill-treated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. May God bless to us that reading from his word. I think there's all sorts of theories about who the writer of the Hebrews is. I've decided that the writer of the Hebrews was a good, solid African-American preacher, because he just repeats the same thing over and over again with a rhythm. It's fantastic. There you go. Trudy, have you got any updates for us that you'd like to share?
All of you know that I've accepted a call to Rugby Baptist Church to become their minister in training. So I start with them officially on the 1st of September. Yesterday I went up to Rugby to look at a flat, have agreed with the church that that's what we would like to apply for. Tomorrow we'll be liaising with the estate agents to see if we can get that process going. There's a few things that need to happen, like a little bit of decorating and things. I think everybody knows everything else. Is there anything else you think of? I think that's it, really. You don't know what you don't know. There's nothing more to know, really. The landlord would be looking to have the tenancy started at the end of July, but I don't finish work, so I've handed my notice in at work. There's an update for you. Okay, so I've handed my notice in at work. I've given them 2 months' notice because of various things going on. My colleague is off on mission next week for a month, so leaving at the end of July would not be a good idea. So I finish on the 24th of August, or 23rd of August is my last day. So that gives me sort of a week before I actually start with Rugby. I can move things up, but I will probably sort of move up bits at weekends throughout August, provided we get the tenancy in time for that. But officially I actually start with them on the 1st of September. So by September you'll have rid of me. So yeah. As Paul keeps saying. No, I don't. I don't know. I don't know when my induction ceremony will be. Sorry. And I don't know who will be preaching either. just because I've had hints dropped left, right and centre. But no, as soon as I know anything, we've still got a lot of the process to go through. We've still got settlement agreements to sort out. I'm just about to do my DBS check, and I'm sure there's probably a million things I don't know about that we need to do. Because funnily enough, this is the first time for me. So college, the theology part of the college starts week of the 13th of October, but the ministerial formation block week is apparently a couple of weeks before that. So I haven't got any firm information on that. So I'll have a few weeks with the church before I actually have to start thinking about college.
Saves me answering questions and getting it wrong. I still get it wrong. We're going to stand and sing our next hymn, How Great Thou Art. Our second reading comes from Genesis chapter 15, starting at verse 1 and ending at verse 21. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless, and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, You've given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. And the word of the Lord came to him, This man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. He took him outside and said, Look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, So shall your offspring be. Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. He also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, how can I know that I shall gain possession of it? So the Lord said to him, Bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abram brought all of these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Then birds of prey came down on the carcasses, but Abram drove them away. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and ill-treated there. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure. When the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking brazier with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, To your descendants I give this land, from the Wadi of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, Kadmonites, Hittites, Perizzites, Rephaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites. This is the word of the Lord. Amen. On Thursday this week, I went on a school trip, because I'm now old enough. But I went on a school trip to Hengistbury Head. I was supposed to go on this school trip last month, but the weather was so dreadful, the teacher cancelled it and postponed it. And then Joel came home on Monday and said to me, It is still okay for you to go on the school trip, because that's what I've told Mrs. Andrews. So I went on a school trip to Hengistbury Head, and what a joy it was to spend time with that class. We went, we walked all the way up to the top of Hengistbury Head. We looked at different bits, and we looked at this strata and all that sort of stuff, which, if you don't know what that is, that's the levels of rock. That was great. And I think because we were nearing the end of term, we may have spent slightly longer at the beach than we possibly should have done. But I think the teacher had just got to the point of going, oh, let them enjoy themselves, it's fine. So we sat on a beautiful sandy beach with the beach huts behind us and the sea in front of us, overlooking towards the Needles and Hurst Castle and all along there. And oh, it was lovely. And one of the children said, Did you know? And I said, What? Did you know that there are more stars in the universe than there are grains of sand on Earth? And I said, Wow! I don't know how you've counted them, but wow. And it just brought me back to this passage there are more stars. You know, your descendants will be as numerous as the stars in heaven or the sand on the shore. Now, I don't know whether that boy was right, because I've got absolutely no idea how you would count that, to be perfectly honest. But the point he was making was, that's just an enormous amount of stuff, isn't it? And this is the promise that God makes to Abram. Not Abraham, to Abram. He doesn't become Abraham for a little bit later. But here's the promise that he makes to Abram. And I want us to focus, well, we're going to look at everything, really, and I'll probably meander all over the place, but I want us to focus, really, on verse 6, the bit that I couldn't say. And that is that Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. It's always better the second time around, isn't it? What does that mean? Because it's always bothered me. I'm bothered by the idea of faith. I've always been a bit bothered by it. Because maybe I'm a bit too cynical, but faith for a long time, for me, meant believing God existed. That was it. That's where I was for quite a long time. And I was like, yeah, I've got faith. I believe that God existed. I believe God exists. Yeah, of course. No problem with that. That's faith, isn't it? And that's an element of faith in that, because if you don't have that part, then you can't move on to anything else, can you? If you don't believe he exists, then everything else is irrelevant. But for a long time, that was that. And so I used to get quite cynical about it. I was like, yeah, well, it's kind of, in some ways, it's irrelevant whether you believe God exists. He still exists. In the same way, I could believe that Donald Trump doesn't exist. I could believe that wouldn't stop him actually existing. And I could believe that I was a 6'4", built like a brick wall kind of person, but I'm not. Nancy made me laugh last week. She said to me, I identify as a thin person, Paul. I said, really? She said, yes, I'm trans slender. But I can believe all sorts of things, but there are certain, is that really what we're called to do? Do you believe in God's existence? I don't think God is bothered whether you believe he exists or not. It doesn't cease him being. Does it mean something else? Does having faith in someone, does having belief in someone mean something else? When Trudy came and met with me in the back room with Rachel and said, I think I'm being called into ministry, I had to do something. I had to be active. I had to believe in her. I had to have faith in her. I had to say, okay, let's explore it. Let's do this. Because faith is an active verb. It is not something that we just do. It is something that we make an active choice to be engaged in. Because of the complete unknown that you're dealing with. Does that make sense? You're dealing with an unknown. So you have to actively choose to say, I will believe. It's not something you fall into, or at least it shouldn't be. And when we believe in people, you know, so when someone says to a child, I really believe you can do this. Go on, go for it. At no point are they questioning the child's existence. What they're doing is, I reckon you could do this. Go on, have a go. And if it goes horribly wrong, it doesn't matter. I believe in you. I'm putting my faith and my trust in you. When Samuel got his part as George Banks, which is coming up very soon, I'm very excited. But when Samuel got his part as George Banks in Mary Poppins, he came home walking on air. I could have tied a string to him and flown him as a kite. Oh, that was a quite good Mary Poppins reference, wasn't it? There you go. And do you know why? Because the teachers believed in him. And he has gone to every rehearsal. He is 100% committed. And what it's taken is someone saying to him, you can do this. And he's like, I'm not going to let you down. Isn't that great? That actually when we do that for other people, they can walk through fire if we believe in them. Not telling him he's amazing, but just go for it. Do the best that you can. Over the last few weeks, Naomi's been taking her GCSE exams. This has been a stressful time, mainly for me. But we were having a bit of a heart-to-heart halfway through, and she said, I just don't think I'm going to be good enough. And I said, well, all I actually want you to do is to be able to look at me and tell me you've done your best. If you could look me in the eye and tell me I've tried my hardest and I've done my best, then that's enough for me. And what I watched was her go, oh. Because she'd built up a whole load of tension that she didn't think that she'd be good enough. She didn't think we believed in her enough. But actually, I need her to know that she's good enough. And just go and knock their socks off. Be honest with me. If you tried your best, brilliant. If you haven't, then you and I need to have a chat. But if you've tried your best, go for it. You're good enough. You've been who you are. So what does it mean in the context of Genesis for Abram to believe God and for it to be credited to him as righteousness? Because the story of Abram from Genesis chapter 11, which is when his father is called to go to Haran, because he's not actually taken out of Ur, he's taken out of Haran. But when he's called from there, sorry, I need to stand still because this is the microphone. When he's taken from there, all the way up until the death of Abraham, is all about faith. Do you believe God? So the first thing we need to remember is that Abraham, or Abram, has grown up in a polytheistic world. And Haran are polytheistic societies. And what I mean by that, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, is they have lots of gods. They have a whole pantheon of gods. It's not one god, it's polytheism, so many gods. Abraham becomes a monotheist. This is revolutionary. He says, there's only one God. I don't want to worship all of these other gods that we're making up for rain and for fertility and for finding things. I don't want to do any of that. If there is a God who created the gods, surely wouldn't it be better to just be with that one? The one who created us, the one who made everything around us, the one who saw Noah, who is only a great-grandfather of Abram, the one who saw, or great-great-grandfather, the one who saw Noah through the flood. Wouldn't it be better to worship him? Now, if you're going to be in a society where everyone's polytheistic and you go around going, actually, there's only one God, doesn't tend to end well for you. You tend to, as Rosemary quoted the other day, a question that she used to ask her students of what king started his, or ended his reign 6 inches shorter than the beginning of his reign. And that was Charles I. Because that's kind of what happens to you if you don't actually do what the rest of society is saying. So is it a shock that Abram is called out of that polytheistic society and told to just go to where he will be led? And he goes, and the first person he meets, or the first thing he meets when he gets to Canaan, at the Oaks of Mamre, is God. He's gone ahead of him. But he's believed that God is the one who is over all, who will look after him, who will protect him, who will empower him. We then go through all sorts of trials. He goes down to Egypt because there's a famine. He passes off his wife as his sister. I was reading a really interesting commentary the other day about how actually that was a really clever ploy by Abraham. That it would have meant that Pharaoh would have felt shame for taking someone without the knowledge of the knowledge of the husband, and so because he passed her off as his sister, but it was his wife, it meant that that Pharaoh had to pay him off, which is quite clever. So you get these things by reading commentaries. And we go through all of these different tests. And he's getting older and older, and he's been given promises. You're going to be the father of a great nation. It keeps on being repeated. You're going to be the father of a great nation. You will have many, many descendants, as many as the sea, the sand on the shore, as many as the stars in the sky. There'll be even more than that. You will have many descendants. And what does it mean to be a descendant of Abraham? This morning we talked about the woman who'd been hemorrhaging for 12 years being referred to as a daughter of Abraham. And I know it was in Mark, but he could have done a complete genealogy working it all the way back, but he didn't. Because maybe it means something other than that. And as you go through, we have the culmination of the test of faith is, I've given you the child, I fulfilled the promise. Now go and sacrifice him to me. And Abraham believes God, and he says, well, if that's what you want, then I'm going to have to do it. Because I believe you. You've never let me down yet, and I believe you. And I believe that you could make something happen. Because if you are who I think you are, then you can create it. If you created life to start off with, you could recreate it. If you are who I think you are, if you are the one in whom I've put my trust, in whom I've put my faith, then you ask me to do this, I will do it. I may not be happy, but I'll do it because I know you'll keep your promise. What a statement. So Abraham takes a gamble, and let's face it, faith is a gamble. What does the writer of the Hebrews say? It's for things that we haven't seen and hope for things that aren't yet here yet, or something like that. That's the hope. And he says, I think that you are the one who's got the words of eternal life. I think you're the one who's from those the beginning, from the end. I think you're the one that I have to put my faith in. We then have this amazing experience of a covenant that's made between God and Abram. And Abram isn't involved. It's the only time a covenant happens like this. But if you break a covenant, you will take the punishment. Whichever one of the parties breaks the covenant, there are curses involved in that. And you will take that punishment. A lot of the covenants in the ancient Near East would have been, if you break the covenant, well then I own you. You come into my possession, you'll be a slave in my household, or I will just kill you. God says, I don't want you having to do that. I am going to take both parts of this covenant on myself. If it's broken, I cease to be God. Hebrews chapter 6. If it's broken, I cease to be God. But I'm going to take all of it on myself. I don't want this covenant, I don't want this promise to be dependent on you, Abram, because I've met you. And I know you're not me. And I know it's difficult. And I know you might have doubts. So I'm going to give you a promise that I'm going to stake on myself. And if we fast forward into the New Testament, this is exactly what happens on the cross. Jesus' death and resurrection, he takes everything on himself and gives us grace. He gives us forgiveness. We could not bear to go through, even for our own sins, what Jesus goes through. We couldn't bear that separation from God. We couldn't bear that pain and that suffering and being in the possession of the devil. We would not be able to cope with it. And God knows it. And here we have it again in Genesis 15. God knows that Abram can't keep this promise. If this is a straight up covenant, Abram will break it. Or one of Abram's descendants will break it. But God takes it all on himself. I will give you these things. And my promise is my promise. Unlike a politician's promise, you can actually bank on that one. God doesn't make pie crust promises. He only makes firm declarations of what he will do. Interestingly, as you go through the covenants in the Old Testament, they begin to become conditional. If you will do this, then I will do that. But in Genesis, we're still at the point of, I'll do this. I'll take the pain on myself. Just another thought. Covenants used to be sealed with fire. Notice we have this smoking pot that floats between the parts. I think it's fascinating that that's the sealing of the covenant. And in Pentecost, we have this smoking pot that floats between the parts. And so the church becomes the covenant that God makes. And he seals it. We are sealed with the Holy Spirit through fire. I was thinking that's a complete aside. I've really got nothing to do with what we're talking about. But I think it's interesting. And one day I'll write a paper on it and become famous. But God is saying, things are going to get tough, but I'll still be your God. Things are going to be difficult for your descendants, but I'm still going to be your God. Believe in me. You've made the best choice you can. Your gamble is going to pay off. but you've got to just keep believing. And that's where we come in. It's really difficult, really difficult to just keep going, to just keep believing that God's got it. Especially when you're in the middle of it. When you're in the middle of the pain and the suffering and the torment, it's really difficult to go, yeah, of course I can see your fingerprints all over this, God. No, you can't. That's just not the way it works. But actually, we do need to know that God has got us, that he's holding us fast, that he's looking after us. But it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. It becomes a conscious decision of will to believe. It was very interesting. I was talking to one of the people that came to the baptism last week, and they said how moved they were by the fact that Hannah was making the decision herself. Now, I take that really for granted because I've grown up in a Baptist church, and I'm kind of like, well, of course, that's right, isn't it? But Hannah was making the decision herself. And she said, that's brilliant because this is her journey. It's not anyone else's journey, it's her journey. And I said, yeah, I suppose it is. And they said, so isn't that better then that we do that? And I said, I don't want to say it's better or worse. I think it is a good idea that you own your journey, that it's become your journey, that even if promises have been made on your behalf, you own those promises. That you say, this is who I am. I am having faith and I am choosing to believe in God. Yeah, I said each one of us will go through difficult times. But as we go through those difficult times, we need to choose to keep going. We need to choose to keep on the straight and narrow. We need to choose God. Many of you won't know this film. Trudy's probably about the only person who will. But Trainspotting, which was out in the 90s. At the beginning of Trainspotting, when Ewan McGregor comes out of a toilet, which is really weird, but he does this whole poem about choice. And it keeps on going. And it's choose this, choose this, choose this, choose life. But actually, you could write the same poem and end it with choose God. We have to make choices. I would hope, I had a conversation with a lovely man called Alec once, who I said, you know, sometimes people come to church out of habit. And he challenged me afterwards. He said, I can't believe, Paul, in the 21st century that anyone is coming to church out of habit. I did want to stand him in my pulpit at that point and go, look. but he said, surely it's about people making a choice, isn't it? And I'd hope that actually that's where each one of us is. That we don't come out of habit. We don't come because it's something to do on a Sunday. We don't come because it's warm. Although it's quite warm today. We don't come for those reasons. We're coming and we're following because we're choosing to go there. We're choosing to hear more about God, and we're choosing to trust him, and we're choosing to have faith in him. I love the fact that Rahab is mentioned in that group of people in faith in Hebrews. I find it thoroughly confusing that Jethro is, but that's a different story. But I find it fascinating, and I love it that Rahab is there, because she could see something bigger than where she was. And by her job, she was the lowest of the low. But she wanted to believe in something greater. And so she chose to. What annoys people most when they're trying to tell you that there isn't a God is that one thing. You can tell me what you like, but I'm choosing to believe. And actually that then affects the way we treat other people. Just to go back to Trudy, choosing to believe in Trudy, choosing to give her the opportunities, choosing to let her make mistakes, choosing to let her preach a sermon where I had no idea where she was going to land, all of those different things, and saying, it's okay, we're on a journey, but are we going to walk this together? God says, I believe in you if you'll believe in me. That's essentially the deal he's making with Abraham, or Abram. You believe in me, I'll believe in you. You've made a choice, you've left your household behind, and you've come. You've come where I've told you to come. You're choosing to believe in me, and when I tell you that even though you are well on in years, this is my favorite expression in the Bible, even though you are well on in years, you will have a child. And your child will be, from them there'll be an inheritance, and there'll be many, many descendants who choose that. If you'll do that for me, if you'll believe in me, I'll believe in you. I'll give you blessing. I'll give you encouragement. I'll help you through the storm. But just choose to have faith. Faith is not something we stumble into. Faith is a conscious choice. Baptism is a conscious choice of saying, I want to make a statement of who I am and who I belong to. You're not good enough, you never will be. But it's about making the choice. And those choices we make every single day, from the moment we get up to the moment we go to bed, we make a choice of whether we'll trust God and live the way he calls us to live, or whether we'll take the easy route because it feels easier. Someone once said, nothing is worth having unless you fight for it, unless you've had to work for it. Faith is choice. Faith is struggle. But the question that makes us sons and daughters of Abraham is that we choose God. We choose to believe him. And we're credited as righteous because of it.